So to begin, just to get some basic biographical details about yourself, your name and age and the first station you joined.
My name is Brian Dobson. I am 58 years of age, and I worked for Sunshine Radio in South County Dublin in Dunleary, and then for Radio Nova, which was located at, between Herbert Street in Dublin and at various stages up in the Dublin Mountains in Stocking Lane.
So what age were you when you first joined a pirate station?
Well, it was 1981. I was about 20 or 21. I was in college, and I was still in college, and I was sent actually for an interview to Radio Southside by one of my lecturers, because they'd approached the college and said, would there be somebody who could read the news for us? And I got sent out with another guy, and they auditioned us both, and I got the job.
And obviously, you were a fan of pirate radio stations before this, obviously. Or?
Not particularly. No, I was doing a course in communications and film and that kind of thing in the Rathmines College of Commerce in Dublin, and so broadcasting, television production, filmmaking, radio—they were all part of our course. So this was an opportunity to get some experience, I suppose, which is why my lecturer, who's a woman called Patsy Murphy, she sent me off, and that was my first break-in. So I worked part-time, you know, during college, and then full-time over the summer for Southside.
So just to start with, your first station, was it with Sunshine?
It was Southside.
Southside. Let's get some details about that, I guess, where it's based and the years it was active for.
Well, now, I can't give you the years it was active. I know that I'd have to think about the years I was there, but... let me see, it was based in the Hotel Victor, which was on Rochestown Avenue in the borough of Dunleary, South Dublin. And it was, the period I was there, so I'd have to sort of work all this out. It must have been, I went into college in 1980, so I would have been there, I think, maybe in the summer, in 81 into the winter of, and I worked through the winter of 81, 82 probably. I think those are the years. I'd have to check those.
That's fine. And what frequencies was this on? Was this AM or FM?
It was. I've no idea. I was really... The technical stuff completely passed me by. I never knew. I mean, transmitters and all that kind of stuff. I just spoke into the microphone and hoped that somebody was looking after the other bits of it.
So you already mentioned that you got involved through college. Do you have any details about, like, I guess, the, you know, the owners and directors? Who was actually running this station?
The two people who were running it were Andy Rowan and Scott Williams. Both of them are still active in broadcasting and in television. Andy Rowan was one of those who devised the lyrics board TV format, which has been very successful. And Scott Williams has been a DJ and broadcaster and program controller in the commercial sector here for all the years since then. He'd been very successful.
How many people would have been involved in this station?
Oh, I don't know for sure. I couldn't say. I mean,
was it a small station?
It was in more or less a shed beside the hotel. And so there was one little room where you sat, the DJ and the newsreader all sat more or less, you know, on top of each other, and there was a little control room, and that was it.
It's amazing. What did the station do? Was it just like, did it play music, or was it any community focus?
It was mostly music, is my recollection. I don't think there was a whole lot of community content in it. So it was a music station at a time when, you know, there was very little alternative music radio in the country. And it was one of those small stations that had started out in a caravan, I think, in Shank Hill, and it graduated to a small shed beside a hotel. So, I mean, that was kind of typical of a lot of that kind of very small broadcasting operation at the time.
What sort of music did it play? Was it just general, or did it have any specific niche?
No, it didn't. It was very general. It was, you know, top 20 kind of hits.
Yeah. And was this was there any commercial aspect, or was it just completely voluntary music based?
Oh, no, it sold advertising, yeah.
So it was commercial?
So it was. It did carry ads, yeah. Now, I wasn't involved in the selling of the ads or anything like that, but it took advertising and, you know, would have generated a small amount of income. And I got paid. Not a whole lot, but we were paid to do our shifts. Yeah.
And did you have any interaction with your listeners apart from just sending out music and adverts? Was there any news, for example?
No, I mean, we weren't doing news gathering. We were picking up news from wherever we could find it, on RTE or into the newspapers or whatever. I'm not sure there was any really local news gathering. People would ring in maybe with local events, and you might mention them and that kind of thing.
Well, you would push news stories. That, like, would you do every hour kind of thing and just take them from other stations?
I don't know if I was doing it every hour, but it was fairly frequent. We probably were doing it every hour.
That's right. How popular was the station?
I have no idea.
No idea.
I mean, this is before there were JNLRs or any of that kind of stuff. So, and I'm not sure how far its reach was. Yeah. It probably wasn't extending a whole great distance.
So I guess to get a very personal insight into this era, do you have any interesting anecdotes or stories you'd like to share about your time in the station?
Well,
he brings a light to this type of era.
Yeah, it was all done on a bit of a shoestring, really. You know, you had that. It was that sort of sense that you were kind of outside the law, so it was a bit exciting. But it wasn't really illegal. We didn't feel it was illegal because it was tolerated. It was allowed. So for me, I looked upon it, I suppose, it was an opportunity to get experience. Yeah, because you work in this kind of industry, you really need to have experience and time, flying hours, if you like, time on the air. So, you know, it was great from that point of view that it gave me that kind of opportunity. It's so long ago, it's hard to kind of think of things that sort of capture the essence of it. I just remember the shed, you know, and I think the rain came in when it rained. It was that kind of setup, you know.
I'm sure it's an industry par for the listeners, adds to the radio aspect. Did the station ever get jammed or raided? Have we ever witnessed to that?
No, not when I was there.
Did you ever hear about it getting raided or jammed?
No, very lucky.
I guess, would you know if the station was on air during 1988 when obviously the new legislation came in?
Or, I don't know.
Were you in a different station at that point?
By 1988, I was I was in RTE.
You were in RTE by that point?
Yeah.
So I guess that's interesting to get a different insight. How was RTE reacting at the time to the sudden change in legislation when the pirate stations were going to be essentially removed?
I can remember there was a lot of, obviously, interest in what was happening, because that was the period at which, if I'm correct in my recollection, that Century Radio was licensed and it was the main national station. And I mean, RTE was obviously very anxious because that now for the first time it was facing competition on the national arena, as it were. There had been local pirate radios, but now there was going to be a national challenge. So I remember a lot of interest in what they were going to do and how they were funded and how the whole thing was going to work and hang together, who'd be on the air. You know, there was a lot of rumors about RTE people who might, you know, take a big check and walk and that kind of thing.
There was talks of people leaving RTE to go to a pirate station.
No, this wasn't pirate. This was when Century came along as a licensed national operator. And it was the first, if I'm correct, I think it was the first national license that was issued to Century Radio. So I was in RTE, that's it, but not very long, so I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention. I was focusing on just trying to bed myself down in RTE. I'd only joined about the previous year, I think, 87.
That's right. Yeah. Would you have ever heard anything within RTE during that previous year about, I guess, how they felt about the pirate stations? Because they had competition from then, early days as well, didn't they?
Well, I mean, no, because at that stage I think they were more or less gone from the scene by the late 80s. But I know when I was in the Pirates that, you know, RTE were, you know, very anxious to have them shut down, and saw them as a, particularly the, when Nova came along and Sunshine and the really very professional pirate operations, which really started to, you know, generate, you know, take revenue away from RTE, take audience away from RTE, started to challenge RTE. I mean, I think RTE were, as you might expect, were very unhappy about that.
Yeah. Let's go into the, the technical setup. As you mentioned, it's in a shed. Like, what sort of equipment would you have been using? Give an idea.
I have no idea. Like, they were all just things with lights and faders and all that kind of
stuff. No technical stuff there. Yeah.
I mean, what happened was that I worked in Sunshine then, I think over a winter, and then the following summer, one of my colleagues, Sybil Fennell, who worked in Southside as well, she appeared on the air, because I'd left Southside at that stage, or I'd gone from there, but she popped up on Nova, which was a new station that had set up at the time. And I thought, oh, Sybil. So I contacted her, and she said, oh, come on in, we might have a job. So I went in, and I got a job on Nova fairly early on. It started, I think, in the summer of, would it be 82? You'd need to check that. But anyway, whatever summer it started, I was listening to it. Yeah, I was still in Southside working there through that summer, and I heard it come on air, and I heard Sybil, who I had worked with on Southside, and I rang her, and she said, come in, and I got this sort of weekend gig, as it were, reading the news, while I was still in college.
Very nice. Yeah. So just to go back to that, so after you left Southside, you then joined Sunshine.
Then I joined Nova.
Oh, then you joined Nova.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Were you ever part of Sunshine?
Never. No. Oh, okay. No. So Southside and Nova.
Then Nova. How long were you in Nova for?
I was there for a year part time, and
what year would this have been at, I guess?
I have to kind of work back. Yeah. So I went to, I think it was 82, maybe 81, 82, through that winter, 81 into 82. And then I need to sit down now and work out things, you know, when you're trying to remember that far back.
Yeah.
And then I did a year there as a part-timer, And then I dropped out of college, and I took a full-time job. So I went full-time with them then for a further year. And then I got hired by the BBC in Northern Ireland, in Belfast. So I went off to work for BBC Radio Ulster in Belfast.
So how did you, I know you don't like, no real thing of the technical setup and stuff, but I guess did you notice a difference between early days and like obviously much more high-tech?
Nova was in a Georgian building in Mount, Herbert Street in Dublin. And, it had a big transmitter which really sent a very strong signal right across the Dublin area. It was just a whole different level of, professionalism, facilities, everything was just on a different level.
Yeah. Very interesting going from the rise, I suppose, witnessing it grow over the years. Did you see Nova grow in size while you were there over a couple of years?
I saw a lot. The changes I would have seen, that the it started out very much as a really... It was started off just playing music. There were no voices, no DJs, but a very strong FM signal. And then sort of DJ voices began to appear, and they began to start doing news, and that's how I got involved. And then they brought in a program director. I don't know if that was his actual title, but that's effectively what it was, a guy called Andy Archer, and he began really to program the station in a much more coherent way, and it really began to develop then at that stage. And we did, as well as doing bulletins on the hour and that kind of broadcasting, we did a daily news program, so called Dublin Today, which we used to 40 minutes or an hour long program every evening at 7 o'clock.
Well, has that really began to challenge,
experience. Yeah.
Would they have gotten their information again from RT newspapers
For that program we would have been going out and doing our own interviews and finding our own stories. And during the day, we were lifting news from whatever sources we could find it from. We used to use teletext news services that were BBC and RTE and whoever was having.
So Nova did a kind of mix. It would take some news, but also get its own news as well.
Yeah, there was a bit of that. There was probably more taking the news from other sources than original material. Yeah.
Did you have was there a different interaction with your audiences in that studio? Would people send letters in and email, and not emails obviously? But
yeah, I'm not very conscious of a whole lot of interaction, and it's kind of interesting because today you're very conscious. With social media, you're always getting feedback from audiences. Yeah. It wasn't really a kind of element of you offered what you had and hoped people were interested. And if you got feedback, it was very patchy. It was a letter or a postcard, or you met somebody in the street, and you didn't get a lot of reaction. In the areas I was in, I suppose if people were doing music broadcast, DJs, maybe they're getting more feedback from people, I'm not sure. But in our area, I don't remember a whole lot of feedback.
Fair enough. Yeah. Here's a lot of questions I have, so thank you very much.
You're very welcome.